Good afternoon, all of us honorable members. We've been looking at whether we are attaining a quorum and we are this far. But we believe that those of us who are here should start getting into the meeting, into the agenda and so on. And hopefully we'll be gaining the quorum. Secondly, that if at any stage where we need to take a decision, we still don't have a quorum, then it's an issue we would have to deal with at that point, engage on what we do. However, we don't think we should abandon the meeting. And I hope there's no disagreement on that. Do we have apologies, Mashle?
We've received the following apologies: Mr. Frolic, Mr. Singh, Ms. Lovett, Ms. Kubai, Mr. Shile, Mr. Kwangwa, Ms. Atemba, Mr. Masondo, Dr. Wornoff, Mr. Smith, and Mr. Mashalela.
Those are the apologies. Can we look at the agenda, honorable members? The only matter, in fact, is the referral relating to the removal of Honorable Malema from the chamber of the National Assembly in terms of Assembly Rule 53A. As you will realize, honorable members, this is uncharted waters because Rule 53A is a new rule. So we had not yet ever adopted the procedure in terms of implementation of Rule 53A. Hence the need for the Rules Committee to come and apply its mind and take the necessary decisions in relation to the procedure in terms of implementation of this rule. I'd like to ask the Secretary of the National Assembly to present a report to us and on the basis of which we will proceed to engage on the issues.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and good afternoon, honorable members. We have circulated a document titled Proposed Guidelines in Terms of Reference for Committee Concerning the Circumstances of Removal of Member. I take that members have received the document. Paragraph 1 basically recounts what happened on the 9th of September, and paragraph 2 speaks to Rule 53A12 that requires the Speaker to refer the circumstances of the removal of a member to a multi-party committee within 24 hours. That did happen on the 10th of September when the Speaker referred the circumstances to the Rules Committee. And the reason it was referred to this committee is because such a multi-party committee has not been constituted as yet. And therefore, the Rules Committee was the appropriate committee because it is the committee that deals with the matters to do with the rules, to consider the matter. And the regiment then says that the Rules Committee may wish to consider the appointment of the committee as envisaged in the rules. And if such a decision is taken, that would still necessitate a House process for the appointment of committee. And here we have given what we consider could be the guidelines to guide such a process. The committee could be appointed and its composition could be similar to the composition of portfolio committees and possibly chaired by the Deputy Speaker. This was the case with what was referred to as a disciplinary committee in the first to the third parliament. It Lagos Chamber and Deputy Speaker. But this is just a proposal or a point to consider. Then the mandate and powers of the committee. We do not think the rule 53A is meant to review the original decision of the presiding officer that gave rise to the use of Rule 51, but that is our view, but to consider the circumstances that led to the removal, the incident itself. And we think the committee might want to consider making recommendations that are aimed at improving the process of the removal of a member or addressing any shortcomings identified. This is informed by the fact that this is a new procedure altogether. We've never had it before, and there might be a need to develop best practice around the application of this rule. The rules empower committees to determine their own procedures, so this committee would follow the same process. And looking at the issue before it, the committee would obviously look at the Hansard, the DVD of recording of proceedings, the minutes of the House, a report by the presiding officer who was in the chair at the time, and a report by protection services who would have been responsible for the removal of the member. And we indicate here that it may be possible that, having looked at all this material, the committee would satisfy it at the information that it has considered. In the event that it needs clarification, the committees are empowered to invite people to make representations. So that could happen. That figure is, in essence, what we are placing before the committee, just to assist the committee in considering the matter. But as the document indicates, its proposals.
Thank you very much, so there's a proposal, a document setting out what could help this rules committee consider the issues before it. Can I have that mic switched off, please? Right at the back. Okay, thanks. Are there any views, Honorable Sienizen?
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker, and thank you very much for the report from the National Agenda Table. I just want to address myself to item A on this particular report, if I may. If one remembers, the reason why we developed Rule 53 in the first place was to deal with disruptions in the National Assembly, where the business of Parliament was not able to continue due to disruptive behaviour by members. You may recall the rule itself was precipitated by two events. One of those, which I think led directly to us discussing this rule, was the day on which the President was prevented from answering questions in the House, and a lot of the minority parties, smaller parties, lost their opportunity to exercise the oversight and perform functions prescribed to them by the Constitution. And so the rule was developed to prevent the business of Parliament from being disrupted. Now, I'm on the record already. I took a point of order in the House one day. I don't believe the correct rule was used. I believe 52B would be more appropriate in this manner because the business of Parliament had concluded for the day. There was no further business on the paper. That being said, I think if we simply rule out not being able to review the original ruling in the HMT process, then frankly members lose their right of recourse to be dealt with fairly, transparently and even-handedly by presiding officers. And so it basically means, well, you're guilty, we'll talk about Kingston's later, but, you know, we're right, you're wrong, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I think the whole point of having a multi-party oversight committee was to precisely ensure that we could ensure that the rule itself was not abused or misused to silence people in Parliament. Now, throwing a member out is an arsenal of a presiding officer, the most extreme tool they can use. And calling on the Parliamentary Protection Services to do so, I believe, you know, should really be a matter of absolute last resort where the House is so disrupted that it cannot continue with its business. And I think that if we're going to be able to review the events of the day, but not to then review the ruling that led to them, then I don't think there's a reason for us to do so, because you're going to then say, say you come to the conclusion that, in fact, the member shouldn't have been thrown out, but not going to review the ruling that led to the person being thrown out in the first place and the Parliamentary Protecting Services vote, simply doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit together. And so I think that whether, in fact, it was correct to use that particular rule on the day has to be at least something that the committee applies its mind to, applies the facts to, and examine the evidence, and then says, yes, it was a correct use of the rule. The procedure was followed. We have followed due process, and therefore sanction of the suspension, therefore, stands. But we can't come here and say, oh, well, you know, it wasn't really the right use of the rule, but, and then we stop going to everything else. I think that it becomes an exercise in futility then. So I think the review of that ruling has been, and I said to you, it's my opinion and the Democratic Alliance's view that in fact the wrong rule was used on that particular day and it didn't warrant the intrusion of the Parliamentary Protection Service because there was no disruption. The member could have been named, the session could have been closed, and you yourself speak in conjunction with the presiding officer could have affected exactly the same sanction that Honourable Malema is labouring under now and avoided the spectacle that was created by having removed from the House, which I think has also affected the dignity. And I just wanted on record, I'm not defending what the Honourable Malema did in any way, shape or form, because I know that's a narrative that's developing. He was acting outside of the rules, and I believe that 52 was warranted because he repeated those unparliamentary comments in the House. And that's why I think it was so serious a nature that in order to withdraw was not sufficient and that the member should have been named and the process followed thereafter. And that's my input on that.
Honourable Speaker, I'm worried that the Honourable stage in such this way because he's already arguing inside that committee or the structure that this rules committee has to create, and I would have expected that we come back to the agenda of today and deal with why we are meeting and if we need to create structure as the interpretation has been suggested, we should do so. And then he can present the arguments in the reviewal of the circumstances that created that spectacle on that particular day. The reason why I'm starting from this angle is because Honourable Hazen is right at the end of his input. Honourable Hazen is correct in his summary of the incident itself, rather than staying inside the area where he's right by arguing that Malema was actually out of order. He was uttering unparliamentary pronouncements because it has been a practice of the EFF. And I really do not want to get into that debate because that's a debate that we should have in that structure. To undermine and insult members of parliament, thus reducing the standing and stature and integrity of members of parliament, by extension, that of the House. We have been cautioned many times before that we shouldn't insult judges and call them names or impugn their integrity because it does undermine the judiciary in general. So is the House. And I want to suggest therefore that instead of arguing in a roundabout way the merits and the demerits of the removal, let's deal with why we are here and create the institution that must deal with that. He can argue that point there in that meeting.
Honourable members, can I direct us to the document that was presented by the Secretary of the National Assembly, and it is the memorandum of proposed guidelines and terms of reference for committee consideration of the circumstances of removal of a member. And if you leave the introduction and you go on to the appointment of a committee, B, C, up to the end of the document on page 2. I'd like to hear the views of the honourable members on this proposal of the strata that we should then agree to form so that it can take up the issue and attend to all the issues, including the issue that was spoken to by the Honourable two chief whips of the opposition and Honourable Susan.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I opened my remarks by saying that I don't believe that such a committee can be formed if we're going to leave A of the document in the document. Because part of the investigation or the undertaking of the committee has to be whether, in fact, from the beginning, was the right rule used, was there a fair application. And what you're doing here, if you're not reading the original ruling, is that you're saying, regardless of what this committee says, regardless of what evidence the member faces before the committee, regardless of what happens in that committee, the presiding officer is absolved and is acted correctly. And there frankly have to be consequences if the rules of Parliament are wrongly used and abused. And this committee has to be able to express itself on that, saying, in this instance, we believe there are other mechanisms available, but you can't have a rule of absolution as a starting point for the presiding officer, because I don't think it's a fair process then. But other than that, I'm happy with the other recommendations here. We're happy with the creation of a disciplinary committee, as long as it's multi-party and made up fairly and proportionately, and that there's a proper and full commitment to arriving at the proper analysis of it. But simply absolving certain people before the process even started, I think, is an incorrect approach and points to unfairness in the process.
Our intention today is to make sure we have a mechanism as according to the prescript of Rule 53A to consider issues arising out of the incident in the House, and I really want to prevail that we should form the structure and we should take the issues to that structure and let the structure apply its mind. Honourable Mulder?
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Speaker. I was not in the House when the relevant incidents occurred, but I took note of what happened. I think it's a straightforward situation. I don't think it's complicated. And I would like to agree with the Chief Whip of the ruling party in the sense that the details will argue when the time comes in the relevant structure. But if you look at Rule 53(12), it clearly says whenever a member is physically removed from the chamber in terms of this rule, that's what happened. The circumstances of such removal must be referred by the Speaker within 24 hours, the multi-party committee for consideration. Now, I would like to argue that the circumstances quite clearly would deal with the total circumstances, which starts with the ruling itself. That's obviously part of the circumstances where somebody reacts a certain way, why people are called, sergeant at arms, or the protection services, and then things happen. So, as far as I'm concerned, that the ruling itself is obviously part of the circumstances. And I really can't think that it could be any problem whatsoever that such a committee should also be able to look into the circumstances of the ruling itself. I don't think we should shy away from that. Presiding officers are also human beings. People may make a mistake, perhaps. We don't know. But under circumstances, I think it gives an opportunity to review the whole thing that happened and then come to conclusion. So in terms of the proposal by the EA table, I would support everything that is said there in terms of BC, and on page 2, except that specific point that excludes the ruling itself. It shouldn't be able to include that.
Honourable Chief,
I agree with Honourable Mulder in totality, except that the same rules of the House suggest, I don't remember which rule that says, that the rulings of the presiding officer are final. That is why I was suggesting that Honourable Stenison is correct in the summary of what he concluded, except that he challenged the presiding officer there in the House, thus producing the whole process that we're supposed to be undertaking, because he should be arguing this argument we were supporting in the committee itself, not there in the House, because the rulings of the presiding officer, according to the rules, are final. And any member, according to one other room, any member feeling prejudiced by a ruling of the presiding officer can take that ruling, that write the ruling to the Rules Committee. The books are very clear about that. And that is why nobody is arguing that everybody here is God and nobody can be questioned. But the rules themselves are saying the ruling in that particular city is final until it's subjected to the review by the Rules Committee. That is what the rules say.
Thank you, Chairperson. I support the creation of this committee based on these recommendations from the officers of the table, from the table staff. But what is very important, when you look at what the committee is going to do, the committee is going to look at the unrevised, unsat proceedings. So in that, everything will be taken in totality. I've heard what the chief whip of the NCS said. Also the GVT recordings of the proceedings. So there's nothing which is going to escape. So in that, the committee, which when it sees that, is going to consider everything. But as you said, this afternoon here, is that we have to establish this committee so that it can start working and make the parliament a house of dignity, which is supposed to be. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Honourable Member.
Honourable Speaker, I think it's very important for us to separate the events of last week with a need to establish the committee in terms of the rules that we've adopted in the National Assembly. So I think the first thing is, let's put the events of last week one side and just look specifically at what is the mandate and what is functions and the powers of the committee. And leave the rest aside.
Thanks very much, Ms. Speaker. Just to correct the record, and everyone's got their hands hard in front of them, I said did not challenge the ruling of the Speaker. I may ask, and I end my comments by saying, I would like our view placed on record. I didn't at any stage say that I was challenging the ruling of the Speaker. I checked the ruling, I know what the procedure is to do it, and that is via the Rules Committee, which is what we are doing now. So I just want that placed on record.
Honourable Mdakane.
No. Madam Speaker, I think we will allow the team that is going to be set up to deal with the details of this matter. In principle, I think we have said really that we should work out in the committee because there's a specific issue that is referred to because of the Rule 53A. And then the committee can't avoid even the issue that is referred to it already. And then designing the procedure and policies, then the committee will work it out. I think we should agree with the setup of the committee or the team or whatever, or it is the committee that is going to be there only to deal with the matter referred to that particular committee. But the rules are very clear. If there's a situation that necessitates the formation of a committee, the committee will be formed to deal specifically with a subject matter, not with all other matters that are not relevant to that. So I think we can allow that because it seems even Honourable Steenhuisen is covered by the process that's going to be followed to deal with those matters there. And then to me, a DC should sit and parties for our names to sit in that particular DC proportional and they start working on this. They report directly to the Speaker because it's the Speaker anyway who's responsible for the overall running of the chamber. And then we should do that and close the matter on that one.
Honourable members, it seems to me we do agree on the formation of this committee. Honourable Steenhuisen?
I want to say I agree with the formation of the committee and I accept that Mr. Spoorbeam, etc. But I've been in too many processes of this parliament where suddenly you want to raise something to the committee and they go, no, that's not in our mandate. And I'm worried that C is going to be what the committee derives its mandate from. And if A remains, it's going to be problematic. That's the point I'm trying to make. I'm happy if we leave out A and say, so you then have an A and a B, so to consider the circumstances that led to the removal of a member and to make recommendations aimed at improving the process of removing the members. And that removes that sort of blanket absolution for the ruling itself. And if we can do that, I'm more than happy to. But what I'm not happy to do is just give somebody a blanket amnesty at the beginning of the process. Because the committee then may well find that the wrong rule was used, and then there's no recourse to express itself on that because it's now not in their mandate to do so.
I think from what I'm hearing in the meeting, people are not disagreeing with the issue being looked at, but I think take it to the committee. Let the committee have the time and apply its mind and argue back and forth and take the issue on the basis also of the list that is put down as material that would be presented to the committee and revise hundreds of proceedings, recording of proceedings, minutes, and the reports. So really for us to pressure ourselves to take a decision that preempts the work that we would like done, I don't think it would be fair to ourselves. I really think, as most honorable members are agreeing, take them, not saying the issue must not be looked at, but just saying take it to the committee and let the committee apply its mind. Honorable Waters?
If we want to, if we want the committee to look at all aspects of what happened on the 9th of September, then taking A out will assist the committee. By keeping A in this report, and let me read it for those of you who are wondering what we're all on about. A is not to review the original ruling of the presiding officer that gave rise to the use of Rule 51. That's limiting the mandate of the committee before it even starts, Speaker. So therefore, if we all agree that Rule 53.12 says whenever a member is physically removed from the chamber in terms of this rule, the circumstances of such removal must be referred to the Speaker within 24 hours and then to multi-party the committee for consideration. So if we all agree that the issue that Honourable Mulder raised, that we must look at the entire circumstances around the event, which everyone says we do agree with, Speaker, including yourself, then there should be no problem in removing A from this report, proposed guidelines, because by failing to do so, we are limiting the mandate and the scope of the subcommittee. Thank you.
Honourable Killian, followed by Chief Whip.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Honourable Speaker, unfortunately, I feel very strongly that we can't allow sub-rule A or paragraph A to be removed, and simply because we expect the presiding officers to restore order in the House. And if every time that authority is exercised, that will be reviewed by some other committee who feels that they would have used a different rule or whatever. As we have it here, it is clear that you cannot review the original ruling, but you can make recommendations aimed at improving the process next time. So, the Honourable Chair Nathan tells us that he feels that 52 was a better rule to use. Fact is, 52, in any case, would have asked the member to leave the House, and in any case, the member refused to leave the House. If you look at the Hansa, it has been repeatedly said that he will go nowhere. So I don't want to go into the detail of that, but I just want to say, in no parliament of the world is there any provision for a ruling by any presiding officer to be reviewed by another committee that is established. A position of a presiding officer and a ruling made is final, and we can check so many other parliaments, and we can start right here in South Africa with provincial parliaments, one of them the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, but certainly in other councils as well. It does not exist that a speaker is taken on review by some other committee. So I really feel very strongly that the document placed before us is well thought through, and this is ample guideline for such a committee to operate and to do its work, because it can make recommendations going forward. Thank you, Chairman.
Honourable
Chief, please. Honourable Chair, I don't really know and understand why he's insisting on this, because if he is scared that in the course of the functioning of that committee, somebody would want to raise the point he's raising, that person would be prevented from doing so. If you look at the material that must be used in arguing the matters, there's item D in the materials that must be available. Shall I say exhibit D? The report of the presiding officer who was presiding there must be tabled to the committee. Obviously, it is not tabled to decorate the meeting. It is meant to even be interrogated and questioned. So you won't be able to review the conduct of the presiding officer. What we are worried about is to ignore the fact that the presiding officer's ruling is final in the House, as it is beginning to show. I can quote an example here. Honorable D.D.'s was presiding on a debate, and Honorable Stephen Hazel stood up and challenged the ruling of Honorable D.D.'s on what he had already instructed Honorable Ben Bongo to do. Supported by Honorable Waters. And I do not understand why we continue to want to do something that is wrong in the rules, to question the ruling of the presiding officer, when there is a process to question those through a process of committees. Now they say, let's make it permanent, which is wrong.
Honorable Khadebe, Honorable Mtagane, Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, sir.
Honorable Steiner.
Thank you, Speaker. I think number 8 must stay, because once a presiding officer has made a ruling in the House, no one must challenge it unless that person has followed the process, the due process of making an appeal to the Speaker's office so that matter can be reviewed. But when you look at the committee looks basically on the issue of the circumstances leading to the removal of the multi-party committee Bilendo, the removal of a person to the multi-party committee. So if this is the mandate of this committee, according to Rule 53A.29, what is critical here is that we must ensure that between the sitting of the committee, between the sitting of the committee and the House, the ruling of the committee, of the presiding officer must stand. Because if it is not going to happen like that, we are going to have a chaos in the House. But what is critical here is that even the processes which are referred to, that number A, B, C, D, and E, it also is going to deal with the totality of the situation. But we cannot second guess the presiding officer, because these people are going to be more arrogant than before. Thank you.
Honorable Takane.
No, I do think that the honorable members really want us to discuss something that we shouldn't. Because the committee or the subcommittee or the team is going to be set up, and they will deal with the circumstances. Then they will advise accordingly the speaker. In fact, if you wanted to say the Rule 53A will review the decision, who would have written it down? Who would have written it down? It's not there. Therefore, we are discussing a matter that is not anywhere in our rules. If we want to amend that rule, that's why anyway, we indicated that the rules is interim arrangement to deal with the current situation. If we want to amend it, they must present it to a team that's amending the rules. At the moment, the rules as it stands is covering us. We should set up this team. Then we'll make a presentation in that team and make proposals to the speaker. I think that's what we should do. I would say, hey, the more we discuss this issue, the more we delay ourselves unnecessarily, because the rule is there, it's covering you very well. Then we must deal with this issue.
Honorable Mulder?
Yes, Chairperson. No, the answer is no. I think we should talk directly to one another, in the sense that there's no disagreement that when a prime officer makes a ruling in the House, that ruling stands in the House. But when I'm talking afterwards, we are talking now beyond the House. And if I listen to the ruling party's members, they say that even in that process afterwards, subsequent, the ruling can also not be challenged. That's what you're saying. That can never be acceptable. No, listen, that can never be acceptable. Because I've listened now, the Honorable Kilian, Honorable Speaker, just now said, a presiding officer's ruling can never be challenged or reviewed. That is not true. No, but I'm not talking about the House. I'm not talking about the House. We are talking about setting up a committee subsequent to what happens in the House. And you are now arguing it cannot be reviewed, that's why A should stay. Now, if you insist on that, then the only recourse remains to go to the courts. Don't you understand that? That's the only recourse.
we all agree, and I think we should not take hard positions now because we're talking apart one another. We all agree that in the House the ruling stands. We expect members to respect that ruling, and if you are not happy, there are a different procedure subsequent. This is where we are now. We are now busy with the subsequent process. So if we come to the subsequent process, you cannot say then, there must be committee, they must now go and investigate, etc., etc., but before they go, A, they are not to review the original ruling. You cannot do that. Because if that stands, the only way out is to approach the courts, something that we all want to prevent. So I cannot understand why we want to include A here that makes it impossible to challenge the ruling in the House, and we all make it impossible to take that ruling on the review subsequent because of certain things that happened in the House. And it's not correct to say that all the rulings will now be challenged. No. It will only happen when there is a specific event and the committee has been set up by Parliament. Honestly, that person, if A stands, I cannot support. I'm sorry.
Honourable Steen, is it?
Yeah, thanks. I think that the Honourable Mulder summarised our position quite simply. And Honourable Steen is wrong. There is recourse for people to challenge rules. And that's what we're doing. It's this body that has the right to challenge and examine those rules. And it's on page 185 of the Court Procedure, if you would like to have a look. I'm not sure why Chief Whip's trying to settle battles he didn't win in the House in this committee, but nonetheless, I'm not going to respond to this. But say to you, if A stands, the committee itself is completely superfluous, and we certainly will not support it, because what it then becomes is a witch hunt that says the members' behaviour must always be examined, but the presiding officers are immune from ever having their behaviour and their rulings looked at, and I think that's wrong. Here, in this case, an egregious event happened, and a member was removed from the National Assembly and suspended. Now, and that's the right unique circumstance. It's something that every time there's a ruling in the House, it's now going to be, brought to a multi-party committee. There was a special circumstance here that invoked the use of the Parliamentary Protection Services, which we all agreed would have been a last resort in matters like this. And if you're going to leave Aiden, I'm afraid we are not going to be able to support it, and you can use a majority to get it through, but you won't have opposition members on that committee, and it's going to be exposed as a witch hunt, and then it's all going to, the whole credibility of the process is going to be undermined. Asking, let's find each other, let's agree that A falls away, and that the committee then looks at all circumstances concerning the events on the day, and arrive at a conclusion that then has credibility in the House, and will then further underpin the rules and prop them up with dignity, accountability, and transparency. If we proceed on from the basis that with A in it, it's impossible to achieve that, and it'd be a complete waste of time to proceed and even start with that committee and then even participate in it, because whatever its findings are, they're going to nullify.
I have 1, 2, 3, 4 hands. You are the fifth honorable Waters, and then I was going to and then I was going to suggest to you that maybe we need some tea and coffee, during which we might actually find a solution to this whole thing. Honorable Gillian, you'll be followed by Honorable Carter and Deputy Chief Whip, and Honorable Waters. That's actually tea. Tea will help us.
Oh, how much? Well postponed.
I'm sure honourable members have had enough minutes to stretch their legs and their thinking towards one another. My list is Honourable Gillian, Honourable Carter, Honourable Deputy Chief Whip, Honourable Chief Whip, as well as Honourable Waters. Are you covered? But I don't know what that means. Honorable Mutakani.
May I try to cover them? Maybe I'll be lucky, you know, very difficult to cover it, but the point is that now we have looked at the issue and then we want to really fight for the retention of A. We think we can get rid of A. The committee is going to be proportional. They will look at all the circumstances, address the challenges, but the committee is there really to advise the honorable speaker. It is the speaker that takes the final decision. That is really the understanding that we accept the whole issue. Of course, the committee is persuasive enough to persuade the speaker. The speaker then will look at it, advise the speaker. The speaker takes the final decision on it. A, then we accept that we should remove A and allow then the committee to sit and work in terms of the terms of reference that we have agreed on.
Agreed? honorable members. The only difficulty we have is that we actually don't have a quorum to be able to take a decision that we should take to the House. So we are supposed to have a sitting on the 27th. We can either meet so we can indeed formalize our decision, or we can take the issue directly to the House. Honorable Ndagane?
I have not contacted many colleagues, but I do think that once we have taken a view here, it assumes that all parties, their leadership is here. We can take that decision to the House on the 27th. There will be no need for another meeting because we have agreed on this issue. We are just respecting the quorum of the Rules Committee.
Agreed. Thank you, honorable members. The meeting is over.
Thank you.